You're listening to Thunder Quack Podcast Network.
Goldie O'Gilt, the Ice Queen of Dawson. I thought I heard the clatter of cloven hooves.
Scroogey McMoneybags, the tightwad of Duckburg. That clatter was probably your brittle bones settling your gilded geezer.
I feel both disturbed and intrigued.
Hello and welcome back to Cartoon Afternoon for DuckTales, Season 1, Episode 15, The Golden Lagoon of White Agony Plains. I'm one of your hosts, Michael Cohen.
And I am your other host, Curtis Findlay.
And wow, man, what a good episode. This show is so good week after week. I don't know if it quite tops last week, because last week was really fun. But this was just such a cool lore building episode, and there's lots of really, really fun stuff in this one to talk about, so I'm really excited to sit down and talk to you, Curtis, about everything that I noticed and everything that you noticed. But before that, you want to jump into our news for this week?
Well, did you watch the music video, the Marshmallow music video?
I did, yes.
It's so incredibly awesome.
Yes.
I'm not a huge fan of that style of music, but the animation on it and just the way they portrayed these characters and what they're doing is just fantastic. It's like head over heels better than the TV show. They put so much attention into it.
Yes. Yeah, did you notice that the spaceship has a passing resemblance to the Thunderquack?
No, I didn't.
Did you catch that?
I did not catch that.
The front of the spaceship, although it's more pointed, it's a beak. And then the bubble that they're in, the cockpit, has a very similar shape to the Thunderquack. So it's very, very similar.
Wow.
In my opinion. So okay. I actually really liked it. I was kind of sketching it over the weekend, because I feel like maybe they could be working off some other designs that are maybe floating around. But you said it already, the animation quality on this was phenomenal.
Yeah.
So much going on, so many cool moments. But I really, really liked it. I thought that it was really great. The song, like the song is nice, but it's not something I'm going to listen to on a regular basis.
Yeah.
But it's cool that there's somebody out there making that style of music that's accessible for younger listeners, right?
That's true. Yeah.
What subject matter there is in a dance sort of like EDM song like that was appropriate for that age group, and I think that's cool.
You don't have to be on drugs to enjoy it.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's not about adult topics, you know. More lascivious types of things. I thought that was really cool. I thought it was a really cool collaboration between Marshmallow and Disney.
Yep, I'd like to see more. If this kind of thing happens more often, I'm not against that at all.
Absolutely. And it did definitely have a little bit of that, exactly what I said last week, a little bit of that Disney afternoon, here's a little music video with your favorite characters from a new show. So I thought it was a really cool opportunity and really, really cool, really well executed, really well done, and full of lots of really fun moments. So if you haven't checked it out, definitely go check that out. I'm sure that you'll be able to see it on the Disney Channel sort of ad nauseum, because they tend to run that stuff into the ground. anytime something cool like that, they're like, let's play it every 30 minutes. Because Disney Channel is a little bit weird with the way that it's programmed, especially the Canadian version.
Right.
But you can find it on YouTube. It's not that hard. We posted it on our Facebook page, right?
Yep. Yeah, I'm sure so. if you are subscribed to any platform that Disney publishes content to, then they've probably spammed you with this music video by now.
Yeah, probably. Cool. Any other news? I don't think there's anything else, really.
That's it from me, yeah.
Cool, yeah. Well, we haven't gotten... probably in the next couple of days, I'll get the press release from Disney XD. From Disney in general, regarding when the next batch of episodes is going to air in July. Actually, I'm just going to check while we're recording here. Bear with me for one second.
Sure.
I'll just check the PR.
I'm surprised at how website. Last minute they released this information, because I always thought that this kind of stuff was released. Because when I was doing a website about like the DC Warner Brothers cartoons, and they always let you know about the episodes a few months in advance with all the stills and everything like that. It seems like Disney's kind of behind the game with the promo stuff.
It is really interesting how Disney treats their own properties. Star Wars, Rebels, we were definitely getting things sooner than we get them with DuckTales, but not that much sooner. I mean, like, we get them in chunks, kind of like we have with DuckTales, right? But the news may be a little bit further out. If you guys heard that, that was my cat. newest episodes, the only ones that are up on the website currently go up to Day of the Only Child, which is the episode airing at the end of this week.
That's right. Well,
so yeah,
maybe we'll have another hiatus.
Yeah. Potentially looking at another hiatus. What are we at? That'll be episode
16.
This is
15.
It's so interesting because on the Disney Channel PR website, it actually lists them with the episode number and then the air date, and the episode number is the production number.
Yeah.
So Day of the Only Child is actually episode 115 in the production order, so season 1, episode 15, even though it'll be
the 16th episode.
But by the way that they count them, because they count the first episode as a two-parter, they've actually got 17 episodes. So, because this episode that we're going to talk about is actually production order 117. So.
Oh, okay.
Very interesting. Just a little peek behind the curtain. So I definitely keep your eyes peeled on our Facebook page, because when we have those dates, we'll definitely post about it there. We jump into this one right here.
Sure. Yeah, this is the Golden Lagoon of White Agony Plains, and the episode description is Scrooge reteams with his conniving ex-partner and old flame Goldie O'Guilt to find a long-lost Golden Lagoon, but Glomgold has other plans. And another note that Academy Award winner Allison Janney stars as Goldie O'Guilt.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Glomgold has been in this... Oh, sorry, hold on a second. Air date, June 16, 2018. Writer, Bob Snow. Directed by John Aoshima. And I was going to say that Glomgold has been in a lot of episodes lately.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's appeared in like almost all of them post hiatus, I think.
Let's see, just about.
He's
just
certainly about. Been used more than the Beagle Boys and Mark Beeks.
Was he in Jaws? No, he wasn't in Jaws.
Was yes, he was. He was, yeah, he popped up at the end in disguise.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He was at the beginning. Yeah. He was interviewing Scrooge on TV.
Yeah, so I guess, yeah, he's in Jaws. He's in McMystery. He's in this one. He's in The Missing Links of Moorshire. He is not in Spear of Selene or Beware the Buddy System, though. Yeah.
Okay, but that's still that's like the last four episodes in a row, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Yeah, and as always, he's fantastic. Such great
yeah, choice. Yeah. In fact, I'm going to jump in my top moments here. One of my top moments is actually Glomgold's character in this one, because while he's played up for laughs as usual, he actually has a pretty devious plan that he pretty much accomplishes, mm-hmm. And it's in a very kind of diabolical way, and he's great. I thought he was an actual villain in this episode rather than just being the buffoon that kind of you laugh off and don't really pay attention to.
Totally.
And he was a little on the creepy side too.
Yes.
Just the way he was kind of hanging off of Goldie and trying to, you know, always trying to put his arm around her and pretending that he's together, or not even pretending, like he thinks that they are together and she just doesn't want anything to do with him.
His little peek inside his mind and how he thinks of himself. And yeah.
Yes. Oh, man. That was great.
That definitely gives you some insight into how Glomgold functions and the fact that he thinks that he's the hero of this story. I think that we can say with some pretty heavy certainty that Glomgold is delusional. just a little bit.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. I'll say one of my favorite aspects of this episode was the tango, and that's kind of, it's got two parts to it, cuz it has the tango at the beginning, and then obviously the sort of reference back to that at the end of the episode. But that tango is just such a classic, like, it's like a James Bond. It really reminds me of the movie True Lies. That whole yeah. scene, because they do totally. They do two tangos in that one as well.
I always think of when I talk about movie yeah. tangos, I always think of the Addams
yes.
Family.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's a different yeah. situation here. It's just a nice plot device because you need two characters talking a lot to mm-hmm. each other to establish their back history yeah. and to establish their current feelings right now and how they're going to go yeah. forward. And you don't want them just standing in a room, so you make them tango and you have something interesting to watch yeah. while you have this exposition.
Yeah, something that's also romantic and dynamic and exciting and easy yes. to follow. So it's a dance that's not all over the place. It's cinematically it's a good trope to go to, I think, especially in this instance. They do a couple of references like that, a couple of tropes that sort of imply the history of some of these characters, and that was one of them that I really, really enjoyed.
Yeah, the tango is just also it's a very, like, it's a romantic mm-hmm. dance, but there's just this, there's a tension yeah. between the two people as they dance, because they get close, they're really close, but they never yeah. actually, you know, make that kind of romantic contact or yeah. anything like that. So it's kind of it's an allegory to how their relationship
absolutely.
Is as well.
Yeah, and it's just, it's animated so well. They did such a great job. Did you notice in this episode that the characters were very expressive with their hands? And I feel like more so than any episode that I can think of, especially okay. Goldie. She was very, very expressive with her hands, and the animation was excellent. As someone who draws himself, hands are one of those things.
Oh, right? Hands are the worst.
It's
They're
just
awful.
The only thing worse yeah. than hands are feet. But yeah, it's so hard to get them right. And then more than that, to really use them to express emotion. It's very easy, I find, to express emotion on the face of a character, but it's...
So when I draw my mm-hmm. cartoons, and I shot myself in the foot because I decided to not give my characters faces. They have dots for eyes, and they don't have any nose or mouths or yeah. ears. And so all of my expression is through the hands and the shoulders.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, oh man, yeah, I even the number of times I have to erase hands to make them look the right way, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, it's one of those tough things. And I found in this episode, Goldie and Scrooge, when they would get into an argument, it would start to get heated. Their hands would start kind of moving around and be very, very expressive. So yeah, I just found that it was just those little character moments were really great in this episode.
Okay, second top moment for me here. Goldie is inside Scrooge's mansion looking for his half of the map, and he wonders where Beakley and Webby yeah. are, and she has them locked up in a wardrobe. What kind of person is capable yep. of tying up Beakley?
Yeah, we,
I just...
Yeah, we cow. Talked about Beakley last week, and what a force she is. And then here she is this week, defeated by Goldie. But Goldie is tricky, right? And
oh,
and
yes.
I think that
yeah,
that's
definitely.
The thing is that the cleverness wins out over the brawn in this instance.
But I always thought Beakley was never fooled by anything. Like, she sees things coming
totally.
A mile away. So, but Goldie has to be extremely
yeah.
on the game here. Like, so I want to know more about that side
absolutely.
Of Goldie.
Well, and that you can, yeah, you can tell that there's history there because Beakley has some things to say.
Oh yeah,
that
was great.
And it's like, oh, this is not the first time that she's had to deal with Goldie, and you can tell. And Beakley is uncharacteristically flustered in that moment.
Yep.
So, I think they kept that consistent, and I think that they, like they do with so much of this show, and we talked about it a lot last week as well. They do such a great job of implying backstory and not just straight up telling you and just sort of like laying the groundwork for it. So yeah. It's fantastic. One of my absolute favorite moments of this is when Scrooge is recounting the tale of how he met Goldie in the first place and talking about the Klondike Gold Rush. And I think it's Huey who's sort of stopping and going like, wait, and he's doing the, again, expressive with the hands. He's counting on his fingers and he's looking and he's like, wait, Gold Rush, wait, how old are you? Which is a question that we keep asking episode after episode.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just funny to see them acknowledge it in this one. And we do get,
absolutely.
We get a couple of explanations. Scrooge and Goldie.
I was going to bring that up in. I was going to bring that up in the Easter eggs or the references.
They're frozen in glacier ice for 5 years or 4 years, 5 years. That's one part of it, and it's like, oh, okay, well, there's that, and then they talk about some more supernatural reasons why they still look so young, so many years later, and I just thought that's fantastic that. Now we
yes,
have we do
absolutely.
Have true explanations as to how Scrooge has been around for as long as he claims to have been around.
Okay, so my final moment, my favorite thing in this episode was the final battle scene where they are fighting with pickaxes, just in this like molten lava. It's like. I'm beating you to the Star Wars reference here. It's like episode 3 when Obi-Wan and Anakin are fighting with lightsabers. It's just, it's fantastic. There's just some incredible animation on it as well, of them just going at it, and incredible choreography as they play through these caves and dance around the lava pits and stuff. And then Glomgold, the comedy that Glomgold has as he tries to insert himself in the fight with his shuffle. It's just so good.
Yeah. And well, and ultimately Glomgold being the the one to supposedly, like, seemingly do Goldie in. And that's such a, that is such a good moment. I really like it because they didn't shy away from it. And they even show you the moment of her going into the gold and sort of reaching out for help and calling out to Scrooge. And it, I think as a kid, you'd be watching that, and that's a very dramatic moment. I mean, I think for us, we know that there's something else.
Yeah.
You know, there's got to be a way out of it. They didn't just kill a character in this cartoon show. But...
Well, it was funny you say that because I'm watching this with my two boys who are 6 and my oldest just turned 9. They at the beginning of that battle, Milo says, "Oh, someone's going to die." And then it happened, and the shock on their face was remarkable. Like, they couldn't believe it. Yeah. And they're like, "There's no way this is possible." And then in the next scene, we see the solid gold Goldie statue. Is like, no, this was real. This actually happened. And like, it was they did it really, really well. And I loved watching it with my boys to see them experience.
And I think most cartoons nowadays don't treat kids with that kind of respect, that they can handle it and that they'll be fine. They're not gonna get traumatized by Goldie getting encased in gold. Especially because of the way that the episode turns out. So nothing bad actually happens to her. She's fine. But you do get, you still get that suspenseful moment of, oh my goodness, did that just happen? How could they possibly get out of this? And then you're not even given very much time to process it before Scrooge gets whacked in the back of the head and wakes up tied up. And it is like I said, it's, there's not a lot of shows these days that respect kids enough to present that and show them something that might be challenging to their emotional status, right? And it's kind of one of those things that, especially as parents, we never want to do that. We never want to put our kids in a situation where they might be upset by something. And this show, much like the original DuckTales, isn't afraid to put kids in a situation where they actually think that the worst has happened. Because the original series, stuff like this happens. You know, I characters do seemingly lose, and then we find out, okay, no, actually, they're fine, right? So, I just think it was such a great, not pulling the punch was super important for the development of these characters and for this specific story and for Scrooge to be where he is, because they go along and it seems like Scrooge and Goldie are going to resolve their differences and that maybe she's changed. And then she double crosses him and he feels betrayed. But then you have to get them back to a place where Scrooge is okay with Goldie. And that's they do that with this part of the story. Because by losing her, he realizes how important she is. Right. And that I think that he actually does love her, and there's a funny, it's like a Batman Catwoman sort of thing, right? It's as much as she's a thorn in his side, Scrooge needs someone that can keep up with him, right?
Yeah, I totally thought of Batman and Catwoman as well. It's definitely like that same sort of relationship there.
Yeah, it's such a great like a storytelling device to have your hero pitted against their foil, but a romantic foil. And to have that back and forth, and that's my final my favorite part of this episode is just sort of an overall tone, and it's the banter back and forth between Scrooge and Goldie. It's that can get really tired really fast when the writing isn't very good, but the writing in this is so good that that banter is fun all the way throughout. Even right up until the end of the episode, and throughout sort of, you know, the ups and downs of Scrooge's arc. It takes on different aspects as it goes, but it's always got that playfulness to it that it needs to have. And it's playful, but it's not childish. I mean, the boys are maybe childish, but they're children, so it's okay. Right. With the oohs.
No, that was perfect. Yeah. That's exactly what you would expect them to be doing.
Yeah, exactly. I really, really liked it. It just, I think it speaks to one of my favorite aspects of the show, and it's a little bit what I was just saying, which is that they don't dumb it down for kids, right? They definitely challenge them to keep up with these characters. And I think that is so in keeping with the spirit of the character of Scrooge McDuck and the way that he teaches the boys. He's often telling them, like, you can't take shortcuts. It's all about hard work. It's all about, you know, keeping up, and, you know, if you can't keep up, there's somebody else who can, and that sort of thing. And I think that comes across in the way that the show is written as well, which is like, it's sort of, Scrooge is there to pick them up when they fall, but they're left to stumble on their own, right, and learn the lessons. I don't know. I just don't think that there's enough of that. I think that so much of children's media is kind of spoon feeding experiences and kind of definitely pulling punches in a lot of ways. I mean, I've been watching a lot of cartoons and stuff with Kara, and we watch all sorts of stuff from Paw Patrol. Which, I mean, like, I don't have a problem with Paw Patrol. I think it's a really, really well-made show. But it definitely is, I mean, it's aimed at that preschool crowd. It definitely pulls punches. It's, everything is very sanitized and very safe.
Yeah, it's all black and white, and the moral is obvious. And
But we've also been watching, this last week, we've actually been watching a lot of Power Rangers. Which I've said for a long time that Paw Patrol is really just Power Rangers without violence. They're all color coded. They all have a specific archetype trope that they follow, and they each have their color coded specific vehicle that performs. The only this is the weirdest thing about Paw Patrol. I can't believe after. What we're going into season 5, I think, that they have yet to create versions of their vehicles that combine. I have to imagine that they want to do that. They just haven't done it.
Oh, I'm sure. Because that's a marketing.
Exactly. Because toy. It's toy one thing that, like, oh, you got to get all, you know, 6 of the Paw Patrol main cast, you know, 7 if you're going to add in some of 8, maybe 9. But it's another thing when you're like, well, I need at least 5 or 6 of these to create the big robot at the end. I think the problem there is, how do you build a robot? What's the robot going to do in Adventure Bay? But it's okay. Cause we're getting off on a little bit of a tangent, but
this is a big tangent.
when they introduced, it's been a little while since we've watched, because we've been watching other stuff. When they go to England, or I mean, I have a whole Heather theory on that, but they have the what's the name for it? Mission Paw.
Mission.
Yeah, when they're Mission Paw, like in order for them to justify Mission Paw, they're like, well, now we're gonna go all over the world, right? Like, that's why we've got all of this other equipment now, is because we're not just in Adventure Bay. So I think there's a really good opportunity for them to be like, we need a robot. Why do we need a robot? To go to the moon.
Because we're in Japan.
Well, we have to go to outer space, and in outer space, you have to have a giant robot. So stuff like that they could do. But
right.
Even something that is a little bit more grown up, like Power Rangers, it still just totally spoon feeds the story to the kids. And that, I mean, like, you're talking about a show that's actually aimed at like 6 to 10 year olds, with the newer Power Rangers shows. I mean, they're much sillier than even the original incarnation. But
well, and we can tell this one they may say that it's skewed. They may say that DuckTales is skewed toward the 8 to 12 range or something. But they're making it for a much older audience. The people who enjoyed the classic.
Absolutely,
DuckTales.
And that's the thing, is that because they're gearing the series towards the whole family, it creates a more sort of well-rounded story. Because you're not just trying to entertain kids, you're also trying to entertain parents. And because you know that parents are watching, I feel like you have to kind of be a little bit more smart with your morality. But I mean, I think that this is one of the things that Disney does best when they do actually focus on it. And that's creating content that is suitable for the entire family, where the little kids can get into it, but the adults can still get something out of it. I mean, Incredibles 2 just came out, and by all accounts, I haven't seen it yet, but by all accounts, it's getting rave reviews, and everybody says that it's fantastic. So, like, that's adults and kids and everybody. And that's, like, Pixar and the newer Disney movies. Like, we've got Wreck-It Ralph coming out later this year, Wreck-It Ralph 2. It's... Like they, you can tell when you're watching these movies that they're focused not just at kids, but at the entire family, and that's
that's becoming art.
And I don't think that anybody does it better than Disney does it. They know exactly how to get to the core of that and have smart stories that work on.
Well,
all
they always
levels.
Have. Yeah. Even way back in the 40s, they were doing that too.
Absolutely. Do you want to get into our behind the scenes and Easter eggs?
Yeah, I think we've got a lot to talk about here. Now, where do we start? I mean, we could talk about... we mentioned the devices that the writers inserted to try and explain how Scrooge has stayed youthful, and Goldie in that fact. And so Goldie mentions the Fountain of Youth in Wrong Way, and we've been to Wrong Way before. If you listen to some of our classic DuckTales episodes, the crew took a trip to Wrong Way, so Goldie referenced that there. And then Scrooge says that he's stuck in a timeless demon dimension, which I would love to see the story behind that. I hope that is an episode at some point. But I don't know that that's a reference to anything in particular. But it's just neat to see how they threw those in just as an aside to see if people would notice and put the clues together.
I think it'd be great for a comic book. For them to do a story of, because he says that he was there quelling an uprising, and she was like, "Oh my god, I'm the one who started that uprising." That would be really funny.
Yeah, if we get a POV kind of story, one's from Scrooge's side, and then the second half is from Goldie's side or something like that. So they meet a bear in the cavern, and if you've read, I guess we should mention that, of course, if you are unfamiliar with the original DuckTales, that this episode borrows heavily from the stuff laid out in the original DuckTales episode called Back to the Klondike, which is also references way back to the comics from the 1950s. Mm-hmm. Where when it was originally written in the 1950s, in 1953, Scrooge was actually at an age where he could have been actually in the gold rush. But of course, now we're talking 70 years later. It's a lot different now. Goldie's a character that pops up time and time again. Don Rosa wrote her and expanded her story in The Life and Times of Scrooge McDuck, which I think Fantagraphics is re-releasing in a nice, really nice hardcover book pretty soon. So that'll be really good for any of you who are interested more in Scrooge's history and how he came to be where he is today, and fictionally, that is, not actually historically. And where was I going with this? It's so in the story, in the classic story, and in the comic, Goldie has a pet bear, and she doesn't have the bear in this new episode, but they meet this giant bear, and Goldie gets tied to the bear, and I can't help but think that this is a reference to her pet.
Yeah.
What do you have a few things on the list, right?
Yeah, so as they're digging through to find the lagoon, they come upon the Rainbow Caves, and this is actually a reference to an old ride at Disneyland, Rainbow Caverns Mine Train, which there are still references to. The Rainbow Caverns Mine Train was removed to make way for Big Thunder Railway, the Big Thunder Mountain Railway.
Nice.
In the late 70s. The beginning of Big Thunder, and I can't remember, I've only ridden Big Thunder in Disney World once, so I don't remember if it's got the same... Actually, did we ride? Maybe we didn't even ride Big Thunder in Disney World because we were trying to ride all the stuff that they don't have in Disneyland.
Yeah, Big Thunder doesn't exist anymore in Disney World. They swapped it out with the Seven Dwarfs.
Oh, really? Right. Okay.
I think
they're in different parts of the park.
You're right. No, Big Thunder is over by Splash Mountain.
But the beginning of Big Thunder Mountain. Sort of as you're going up, at the very beginning when you're kind of getting the storytelling part of it, it references the Rainbow Caverns.
Nice.
So yeah, that's, and actually there's a Mickey Mouse cartoon, like the newer Mickey Mouse cartoons, where Mickey is trying to take Minnie on a romantic ride through the Rainbow Caverns. And in that, he actually, this is one of the reasons why I know this trivia, because in that he's like, oh no, I've got this map that goes right there. And he pulls out a map, and the map is actually a map of Disneyland. And he's like, this map has never failed me before. And it's kind of got all of the stuff on it, and it's pretty funny. But so that's just a cute little nod to some Disney nostalgia there. And then towards the end of the episode, when Glomgold and Goldie have Scrooge on the ropes, Glomgold starts to make a reference to Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark. Actually, that's incorrect. Raiders of the Lost Ark starring Indiana Jones. That's the technical title.
Right, yeah,
film.
Get it straight.
He says, once again, you see that there's nothing you possess. He says, once again, Scrooge, you see there's nothing you possess. And then he stops himself because I think Goldie's about to triple cross Glomgold or whatever. But he stops himself before he can finish the quote, which is, there's nothing you possess that I cannot take away. And that's from the beginning of the movie oh my goodness, the name just fell out of my head. I'm not gonna remember it. But the French archaeologist that's always following any Indian and his guide go into the Indian Doctor Octopus. Alfred Molina is the actor that plays it.
Right.
They go into the temple, and it's arguably the most famous scene from Indiana Jones, right? He takes the idol, and then the boulder chases him out. After all of that trouble, he gets out, why can I not remember his name?
Bug you.
French archaeologist is there, and he takes the idol from Indy, and says that line. So it was a very good. Deep cut reference, one that they're allowed to make because now Disney owns Indiana Jones. Not that that would have stopped them before, but they do technically own that character. Although, I think they kind of split the rights with Paramount because Paramount produced all those movies. But, anyways,
It's Dr. René Emile Belloc.
Belloc. Belloc.
Belloc.
Belloc.
It's interesting that I should have figured that there would be an Indiana Jones quote in this episode. And in fact, I think there's a lot of parallels, I think, maybe between Indiana and Marion.
Yeah, yeah.
In just the way that their relationship is.
Yeah, I was definitely thinking that. And then at the end of the episode, when Scrooge opens up the little package from Goldie, and it's got the coin. Yeah, that's...
And the
yeah,
note.
And it's like, oh, well, that's... Like, that to me was very much a... an indie Marion type of thing. There was definitely a lot of, that was a very specific reference, but there were a lot of sort of implied references to Indiana Jones and sort of that genre of pulp, archaeologist adventure, you know, treasure hunter type stuff, which obviously, yeah. I mean,
well, and like with the yeah. traps, the shooting darts yeah. and all that.
DuckTales
kind of stuff
has always yeah. had that, you know. Arguably, sure. you could say that DuckTales is one of those influences on Indiana Jones. I mean, DuckTales, the comics predate Indiana Jones, and they are part of that history of pulp.
It's all treasure just hunter circular. Adventure.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, when you get to the 90s and they make DuckTales, the logo itself is a reference to Indiana Jones, and you know, like it's all that same sort of thing. It's all very, like you said, circular. It's all kind of one thing influencing the other. Yeah. So yeah,
okay, one more reference for you. When Glomgold is telling you his backstory, or like just his vision of yeah. himself and such, is done in this style of a famous artist, Ray Lichtenstein. And he's the guy that makes millions of dollars off of ripping off a comic yes. book artist. the whole thing is done in that style with the, you can see the super obvious four color process, yeah. Dots and everything in the artwork. Totally. So, yeah, that's all I pulled up from this episode here.
Cool. Well, let's hear what our junior woodchucks thought of this episode.
Hi, my name is Peter.
My name is Milo.
And today we are talking about the episode from DuckTales, The Golden Lagoons of White Agony Plains. And we are going to talk about this episode and tell you some of the deaths, but not all of the deaths. Because I don't want to spoil it for you.
This episode is about Goldie.
A duck.
Goldie is a duck.
Goldie is a person from this episode. And she has this, like, thing around her neck that doesn't let her get burnt. The thing that Goldie wants about Scrooge, actually everyone, well, she takes pretty much everything. It's really weird and funny. And so Goldie's trying to, like, steal the Golden Lagoon, like the, like, River of Gold, and they have to, like... I don't know. They have to find it, but... And then Goldie falls into the Golden Lagoon and turns into gold. But it's really burning hot. And remember the thing I said that's on her neck? She doesn't get burnt.
To a crisp.
Right. And Milo, what's your favorite part? I'm pretty much only talking here.
My favorite part was... I don't have a favorite part.
What was the funniest part then?
I have no funniest part either.
What was the boringest part ever in this episode?
It was when, at the end, when Glomgold was just going blah 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 before he even pulled the lever. He's like blah 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 blah.
And the funniest part for me, aka not boring, is when Louie, Dewey, and Huey were like, ooh, you have a date, hey? That was my funniest part. I'd say 4 lucky dimes. How about you, Milo?
I would say 1 lucky dime.
What? You don't like it that much?
I do not like it that much.
Okay, I'm signing up. Off. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, rounding out this episode, we have our Lucky Dime rating. And I think, you know, we didn't talk a lot about this, but I found that the first half of the episode was actually a little slow for my boys. They got a little restless because there was just a lot of talking and a lot of catching up and all that kind of stuff. And a lot of concepts and just things that they didn't understand. Like, they talk fast. They throw out weird words like demigorgon and stuff, and it just, a lot of it just went over their heads, and they're like, I don't even know what they're talking about. And when Scrooge is like trying to steal all of the put the food in bags to take away, and they didn't get any of that kind of stuff. So watching it with them through that perspective was really interesting, and it's going to make me give this episode a lower rank than probably you will give it. I think I'm going to give it a 3.5.
Okay.
I was going to give it a 4, but I'm going to knock it down a half a notch because my boys weren't interested for the first half of it.
Yeah, actually, you know what? I mean, like, I think I'm inclined to agree with you at 3.5 because I do agree that the first half of the episode had some gags that were clearly just there to be gags. And I think, like, although the food thing does recur, because then again in the general store there's a reference to it, and then at the very end when he gets knocked over and all of his stuff goes flying, they don't draw attention to it, but scattered around him as Goldie has the pickaxe pointed at him is like all the little cocktail weenies and appetizers and stuff. But it was a little bit like, I'm not exactly sure why this is happening. they crammed a lot into a 22 minute episode, and that does kind of make it a little bit weirdly paced at points. But I mean, like, overall, I think they did a great job. I think that they covered a lot of ground in a really great way, without doing a bunch of flashbacks over and over and over.
For sure, absolutely. But it's the flashbacks, I think, might have helped with just the attention span, I guess, of my guys.
That's fair.
To have it visually told rather than just having them talk about it.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. I think somewhere in the 3.5 to 4 rating is where I would put it. So I'll go, just to tip the scales a little bit, I'll go 4. A 4 out of 5. But not one of the best episodes of the series, but certainly not in the, just a little bit ahead of the middle of the pack, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. Cool.
So next episode. Oh, no, wait, before that, episode
ranking. No. We got to do our episode ranking here. So this was really interesting because last week, Beware the Buddy System got a 70% of the votes. This week it only got 49% of the votes because people really liked Jaws, and that one got 33%. So not quite enough to bring it all the way down or anything like that, but still a sizable chunk was taken out of the Buddy System, because I think Magica, it furthered that whole mythology, that kind of thing. And then McMystery at McDuck McManor got 10% of the votes, and Spiracoline got 8% of the votes. So Spiracoline is out of the running now, and we are going to insert this one here, Golden Lagoon.
Interesting. Very interesting. Okay, cool. So next week's episode, the Day of the Only Child. When Dewey invents a holiday that allows the triplets to be only children for a day, each realizes they need their brothers more than they thought. So I'm interested to see what this episode's going to be like. If it's going to sort of break it up and tell the perspective from each of the brothers individually, or if it'll kind of be a three-part story and it's the 1, 2, 3, or maybe, I guess, 4, because then they'll come back together at the end. But
right.
Yeah, I'm.
I'm really interested. I'm looking forward in this one, to it for sure.
And I hope that maybe there's some launch pad in it. There's one really great launch pad joke in this past in this week's episode.
Oh, it was like really good. Yeah.
One of my favorite jokes in the episode.
But he, it wasn't him talking, though.
He doesn't do anything. He's, that's exactly the problem. But I need some launch pad. I need some more launch pad. Yeah, cool. Well, that does it for this week's episode. So thank you guys for listening. We'll catch you on the next episode.
Yeah, see you next afternoon.
Don't forget, you can stay up to date with all the latest DuckTales news by heading to cartoonafternoon.com, where you'll find everything DuckTales and Disney cartoon related for the shows that we cover. You can also follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/ToonAfternoon, as well as on Twitter at ToonAfternoon. And if you want to send us an email, you can do that by sending us an email at ToonAfternoon@gmail.com.
You can also find us on Twitter. You can find me at Curtis Findlay, KURTISFINDLAY.
And I'm on Twitter at ArkWulf, ArkWulf. And don't forget that we are a part of the Thunderquack Podcast Network. Head to thunderquack.com to check out all the other great podcasts in our network. And if you want to support us, you can do that two ways. First, by heading to store.thunderquack.com to pick up some merch. Or you can head to patreon.com/thunderquack and pledge your support over there. It's a monthly pledge. As low as $1 a month gets you access to the exclusive Thunderquack podcast, as well as the Thunderquack Patreon Facebook group. So that's patreon.com/thunderquack. And thank you to everybody who does support us over there.
Disney Dad's Cartoon Afternoon is not associated with the Disney company in any way. All characters, titles, music, and everything is all copyright of their respective owners. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Disney Dad's Cartoon Afternoon.